Hey, this is Mark Patterson back again with another exciting episode of Finding Your Summit. And this week we've got a great guest on. His name is Jerry Robinson. And Jerry and I go way back. We're teammates with the Raiders back in the day. Jerry's a guy that went to UCLA, was a three-time All-American, ended up as a number one draft pick to the Philadelphia Eagles, played 6 years there, then was traded to the Raiders, played another seven. And that's where he and I got together and became friends and has stayed connected ever since. So it's just a great interview of Jerry and I talking about life. He's so grateful for the things that matter the most. Like all of us, it's not all about something super shiny and how great he was. He had to overcome some adversity, which he did. Talks about his brother being shot and killed and just what that was like on him and whatnot. So stay tuned. It's a great podcast. Jerry's a wonderful guy and a deep soul, and just really loved having him on. Stay tuned. It's awesome. I'm really fired up to have this week's guest on, Jerry Robinson. And the reason why that is because Jerry is an old-time buddy of mine. We used to play together at the Raiders. And between all that, Jerry is just a phenomenal guy, and he had an amazing career. You know, I had my 15 minutes of fame in the NFL, but Jerry certainly was legit between his college career, his NFL career. So we're going to get into that. Again, I'm broadcasting from my World HQ broadcasting site, which is in Hermosa Beach, and I go up the coast to the north just a bit, to Santa Rosa, where I think Jerry grew up. So, Jerry, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. You know, when I opened my eyes this morning, I immediately had an attitude of gratitude, and that's the best way for me to start my day, man. And so I'm doing great. I got a pink shirt on here, man. I'm feeling good. It's summertime. Football season right around is here. And I'm like, what could be better than that?
You know, I knew I was going to love this podcast talking with you because every single time that you and I get together, it's just nothing but great chemistry and a lot of laughs, you know? And to wake up with that kind of attitude every day and feel blessed is just the way I like to do it. I call it FOF, which is feet on floor. First thing I do, I get up bright and early, feet on floor, gets me going. I run out the door and do something athletic.
Well, you know what, Mark? I've learned that over the years, you know, I've been very blessed and fortunate, you know, athletically, and my family's healthy, you know, things like that. And although my body at this point in my life is a little beat up from the 13 years in the NFL and the 4 years in college, you know, every now and then you start to feel sorry for yourself. But it's amazing what happens to me every time I start to feel that way. I could either be in my car or I could be walking somewhere. And God will put somebody in front of my face, man, for instance, in a wheelchair going across the crosswalk. And I'm like, oh, my God, I have a lot to be thankful for. So that's the way I try to look at life. You know, I like the way you look at the FOF. That's cool, too, man. But whatever it is going to be positive. It's like there's enough going on in this world to make you unhappy and sad. And there's a lot of negative stuff going on. So I'm just trying to start my day just like you on a positive note.
Well, that's a great way to do it. And, you know, I've been saying for years now, because I've gone through my challenges, you know, again, the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit. It's really about overcoming adversity and finding that success. And we all have different variations of what that looks like. And what I really try to do now is go towards the light. And things that make me happy is what I gravitate towards. So things like, you know, us blowing up North Korea and things like that, you know, that does not make me happy. And so I don't go towards that, right? And everybody can do their own thing. But, you know, like you, I'm in that point in my life where I want to be around people that bring me joy. I want to be or doing things that I love to do. That's why I do my mountain climbing thing, you know. And it just, you know, puts you in just such a better frame work of getting up, seeing life, and seeing how that goes.
And you know what, Mark? You know, you're absolutely right. That's why, you know, I missed you so much, man, on this last Raider reunion, this alumni weekend, because as you know, you've been to two of them, and it's something about getting around your former teammates and your friends that is one of the most exciting 3 days of my life. You know, when I get to see you and Berline and Steve Wright and just, you know, Willie Brown and all the other guys from that Raider experience, from that Raider family. It's a great feeling. And I missed you not being there this year. And I'm, you know, hopefully you'll be back next year. But I just want you to know, man, you were definitely missed, especially by this brother right here.
All right, man. I loved it. You know, last year I had such a great time. I mean, I look back on that year, 2016, and it surely was a highlight for me. To be included in that group and to get up there, and I wasn't sure about it when I entered the hotel, and there was just all this camaraderie and all these guys after all these years, and it didn't matter if you played 2 years or 15 years or whatever, you know, Cliff Branch and Fred Biletnikoff and Mark Davis sitting in there, you were there. There's all these guys. There's just all this love flowing around, and again, we're talking about, you know, going to the light. You know, went back there after all these years, the big gap, and it was just like time had not gone by at all, right? And it was like we were still in training camp, and then it was so much fun. I had my flight booked, ready to go, and some things came up, family things I had to get back to, but next year, 100%, I will be there.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, man, because like I said, it's always great to see you. And like you said, man, there's something about that family thing. It's like people ask, I'm sure they ask you often too, just like they ask me, what is it that you miss about the game of football, if anything? And my answer is always, I miss my teammates. I miss that, even though training camp back in our day was real training camp, now they're in pajamas out there. I mean, if you don't look good with a t-shirt or a pair of shorts on, you don't need to be there. But back in the day, I even look forward to that. And what that whole thing of preparing yourself to get ready as a team, you know, as a brother, to play against somebody else. I miss that. I miss that camaraderie. And so, you know, like we said again, man, it's just exciting to get back there at the Alumni Week because for me, and I grew up here in Santa Rosa, California, which was the Raiders training camp back in the 60s and the 70s. So yep. I've been a Raider fan since a little kid, man. So at the Alumni Weekend, I get a big kick out of the older guys. I call them the OGs, the original Raiders. Yep. You know what I'm talking about?
The original Blanda Raiders. And all those guys.
Yes, you know, and I was hanging out with Daryl LaMonica and, like you said, Fred Biletnikoff, you know, Ted Hendricks, just that whole group that I used to watch as a kid. You know, I even watched Cliff Branch because Cliff Branch is an old dude, man.
Yeah,
but anyway,
yeah.
So, you know, that's what I miss about that game is being around my teammates because we all go through the same thing. Although we might play different positions, we all go through training camp. We all go through pregame. We all go through the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows. And it's just, you know what's really amazing to me, Mark, about this whole thing that we've been experiencing as a professional athletes is that when we get around each other, no matter whether it's at a Raider alumni or at a Raider game or some other event, we can actually hug each other and tell each other that we love each other. To me, that's a very powerful thing, man, because you can't – I'm an emotional – I play with emotion. I'm that type of guy. You got to get excited about something. And to be emotionally attached to my teammates, man, that will never, ever leave me. That's something that I will take to the grave with me and beyond. And that's the greatest thing I think I've ever gotten out of sports, man, especially football.
Yeah, I mean, I would include just life in general. You know, I bump into my buddies and, you know, I have the same experience from the standpoint of that camaraderie because, you know, it's not football, but it's other stuff in life. But I got to tell you a story which includes you. I got drafted out of the University of Washington. And so I remember one of those first Raider training camps. I get in and they say, Patterson, get in there. So I go in and we're, you know, in the offensive unit. And so we're in a circle. And I'm looking in the huddle. Plunkett is calling the plays. Marcus Allen is the running back. Todd Christensen is the tight end. We had about probably five all pros. Henry Lawrence on the line. Dave Dalby, the center. Cliff Branch is the other receiver. And he calls whatever play he calls. And we ready break. And we go up the line. Now I'm 2 feet away from Lester Hayes. We've got you in there, Matt Millen, Howie Long. You know, I mean, the Lyle Alzado. I mean, the list just went on and on. I was just like, okay, if I ever die, which I will, this would be heaven to me, just my football heaven. And, you know, it was just amazing. So going back. So let's break there, and I want to come back to that in a second. But I want to go back to, you know, your motivation, how you got to be who you became, which is this 13-year NFL player. As you said, you had all kinds of accolades in college, All-American. I think you're a three-time ended up 10th in the Heisman voting. You know, just this amazing career for anybody. And I want to start with, you grew up in Santa Rosa, right?
Yes, I grew up here in Santa Rosa, Mark. And I tell you what, my mom and dad, and I had a brother named Jackie Robinson. And
let's just clarify. It wasn't the Jackie Robinson. It must have been Jackie Robinson too.
Yeah. Well, you know, my mom and dad, you know, they named my older brother after the Jackie Robinson. Yes. And by the way, I named my daughter after my brother. And growing up, man, we used to have to pick apples and prunes and grapes. We get up at dark. It's like 5 o'clock in the morning. And me and my brother, like, what are we doing? And we'd go there and pick these prunes. I remember the first experience picking prunes. We ate more prunes than we picked. So we had a rough evening that first particular time. It was
I understand.
But I remember my mom, she'd work harder than us. Me and my brother had more fun. But at the end of the season, of just before school started, what my mom did, she took our money and all the money that she made, and she went out and bought us school clothes, man. She was trying to teach us about a strong, hard work ethic. And that's where that started from. But being here in Santa Rosa, man, it was interesting, man. Me and my brother, I'm going to just speed this story up to the only brother I had, his name was Jackie Robinson. And what happened was my junior year, my senior year in high school, I was playing in a basketball tournament. And it was our day off. And therefore, we went to watch a game to see who we're going to play the next night for the championship. Well, while I'm standing there watching the game, the athletic director comes over to me and he says, Jerry, you have a phone call. You can take it in my office. There's an emergency phone call. So I go into the office and I'm on the phone talking and find out that I had to get to the hospital because my brother, I was told, was shot in the foot. So I drive over, get to the hospital, and I see my mom and my dad sitting outside. I said, where's Jackie at? She said, he's in the emergency room right now. I said, emergency room. So I walk through the door, and as I open the door, I'm looking around, and I see my brother in the far left corner in this emergency room, just body just shaking, and he's jumping off the table and this and that. And I'm like, oh, my God, I don't understand. So I came outside, and I said, Mom, Dad, you know, you guys told me that Jack was shot in the foot. They said, no, your brother's actually been shot in the head. We didn't want to tell you he was shot in the head because we didn't think your ride out here to the hospital could have been a difficult one. So, Mark, I'm sitting there crying my eyeballs out. A few minutes later, they're wheeling my brother out, taking him someplace else, and I'm walking or jogging with my brother as he's laying there, and I see this hole in his temple of his head. And when it went in towards his temple, it came out underneath his his jawbone. Yeah. And make a long story short, man, he was in a coma for over like 18 months. And I learned from his struggle, from his fight for life, to never give up, no matter how hard things may be, never to give up. And during that time, Mark, I just, certain things were happening to me. I found out he had passed. Well, I was informed that he had died when I was at UCLA after we'd won the Rose Bowl. Dick Vermeil left the UCLA and went to the Philadelphia Eagles. And Coach Donahue was the head coach, and I remember getting that phone call to come upstairs and see him, and he told me about it. So, you know, every time there was a difficult moment in, whether it's at UCLA or really when it was really with the Philadelphia Eagles, my rookie year, it was kind of difficult on me because I was a first-round draft pick. Dick Vermeil was my coach at UCLA. Now he's my head coach with the Philadelphia Eagles. And some of the guys on the team and people felt like he what might have been playing favoritisms, and it was like, okay, you're from Beverly Hills, you're from Hollywood, you're Dick Vermeil's son, and this and that. So, and they hadn't had a first round draft pick in years, 5, 6, 7 years, and there was a little, there was some problems. I put it that way. But anyway, Mark, I got hurt my rookie year. I pulled a hamstring.
So wait. We need to go back because we're jumping. Okay, so.
I jump everywhere, man.
No,
you know
that's cool. I know. I just want to make sure I'm following the story. So when you're a senior in high school, right?
Yes.
Your brother gets shot, right?
In the head.
Okay. So then roughly 4 or 5 years later, he passes away, right?
No, it's actually a year and a half later.
But you're at UCLA now.
I'm at UCLA. Yes.
Okay, so you're at a year and a half later. You're at UCLA. You're a freshman or a sophomore, and right, and obviously it's hugely devastating news for you. But Dick Vermeil is the coach at the time, right, of UCLA.
Yeah, he was my freshman year coach. Yes.
Okay, I got it.
And then he left after we won the Rose Bowl. He left my freshman year, went to the Philadelphia Eagles. Terry Donahue becomes the head coach, and that's the phone call I got. I had to come upstairs, and Coach Donahue was the one that had informed me that my brother had passed away.
That must have been, I mean, I can't even imagine. I have one sibling, a sister, and I can't imagine if, you know, I would have got that call and you go down and you have to go through. I mean, I've had a couple buddies pass away, and that's one thing, but when it's your sibling, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah, it was difficult, Mark, but the part that I want to share with everybody is that my rookie year, I had hurt myself. I'd hurt my hamstring, and I didn't get a chance to practice much. And I remember laying down on the field stretching, and guys would make little comments about, you know, what a bust the first round draft choice pick is. He can't even do this. He can't do that. And I tried not to let it affect me, but it really did affect me. And about 2 or 3 weeks into practice, man, I remember looking up, watching these airplanes fly over practice. It looked like they were headed west. And I thought about it. I said, you know what? I could be on that next plane out of here if I wanted to be. I could tell Coach, you know, you could take your sign-up bonus back. I don't want anything to do with this. But then I thought about my brother Jackie, who fought for his life. And from that point on, man, that was my motivating factor. You know, it was my brother Jackie. So therefore, I named my daughter after my brother.
That's awesome. How old is your daughter now?
Jackie's going to be 35.
Wow, that's great.
I'm an old man, man.
Listen, Mark. I've got an 18 and 21-year-old daughter, so I'm not too far behind you.
Beautiful daughters.
Thank you. You've met them. Yes. So, okay, so let's go back to college, and so now you're playing football. It's going well. You're a 3-time All-American. When you went to UCLA, did you just have all this talent? I mean, we all had talent, obviously, but some people mature faster. They grow into, they just accelerate much faster. It took me a couple of years before I got going, but how was that for you?
Well, you know, Mark, I went to UCLA as a wide receiver and a tight end, and wound up being a 3-time consensus All-American linebacker. So I don't know. I think it's kind of amazing now that I'm retired to think about the fact that, you know, you can go from a 212-pound wide receiver to a 215-pound inside linebacker.
Yeah.
And it turned out the way it turned out. What I found out was that, you know, UCLA, the coaches had seen me in college, in high school, and at a football camp too, and they were impressed with the fact of the techniques and the fundamentals that I had been taught at Cardinal Newman High School here in Santa Rosa. And my coach Lloyd, I love him to death, he'll always be coach to me. That's what he taught, was fundamentals and techniques. And so I was able to take that, the fundamentals and techniques that I learned playing defense in high school, and and a few skills catching the ball here and there, whatever. And when they moved me over to play linebacker, they were really impressed with my technique and fundamentals. I was told that. So I just was very fortunate and blessed to have a high school coach who really understood that technique and fundamentals should be taught properly. And if you understand those and if you learn those, there's nothing that can stop you from doing what you want to do.
Yeah, I do think, though, because I actually saw you play. I played, you know, on the same team. And, you know, you're a very athletic guy, and you seem to be more defensive-minded, which would be natural because you played 4 years in college at that position on the defensive side of the ball. When I caught up with you at the Raiders, you know, now you'd been in the NFL for a while and whatnot. And so, I don't know, you just seem very natural at that position.
Hey, Mark, this is funny, though, but I didn't even like football, man, growing up. I just, it was something to do. it was something my brother and I did together, and I didn't know what position I wanted to play. So the linebacker thing, actually, the first year I did play wide receiver. So it was actually 3 years playing linebacker at UCLA. And the thing of it is, Mark, I had to learn a position that I've never played before in my life. I never played linebacker before. I was another position in high school. So I was fortunate to have, once again, another great coach, Dr. Jed Hughes. And I didn't know anything about playing linebacker. All I knew about was Dick Butkus. You know, I used to love to watch Dick Butkus play ball.
Crazy.
The way he played.
Yeah, crazy.
And, but I'm not, you know this, Mark. I mean, once you're a wide receiver, I think it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, you're going to turn around and play inside linebacker three more years in college and then 13 years in the NFL. So I don't know. It just turned out the way it turned out, man. I was fortunate. Can you hear that?
Yeah. No, it's all good. So I think part of that fortune is what you do for yourself. I think it's also what you do for, the coaches that are around you. And I think to the teammates that are brought in that play with you at that particular time. When I was at the University of Washington, for years and years and years and years, they were a very average team. And then Warren Moon came up and showed, and Don James showed up. And all of a sudden, you know, we caught the tidal wave. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time when that tidal wave hit. And so, you know, there's a lot of people you count on. But, you know, number one is you got to take care of yourself. And to think that you then coming in as a wide receiver, converting over to a position you never played before, and then by the time you're a senior, you end up 10th in the Heisman voting is incredible. So when I don't know where I would have fit in the list, but it certainly wasn't the top 10. I'm thinking maybe 2000 or something. But the question for you, so when you're number 10 in the Heisman, do you get to go back to New York? How does that work?
Well, not only was I 10th in the Heisman, the answer is yes. But my senior and junior year, I was named best linebacker in the country, which now is called the Dick Butkus Award. Okay, so yes, I had a chance to go back there and hang out with the Heisman Trophy winners. It was really exciting. You know, I never thought I would ever win it, but just to be able, especially now, to look back and say, "Wow, at least I was 10th." So,
I'm a little angry right now because I wasn't invited. Again, I think I would have been about 415, but I'm a little fired up, man. So just out of curiosity, who did win that? Was it 1979?
Let's see, 1 year, Billy Sims won and Charles White won it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think didn't Charles White win it 2 years in a row?
Nope, only Archie Griffin.
Oh, Archie? God, for some reason I thought. Only
one. Well, you know, Charles, there's so many Heisman Trophy winners coming out of USC, so I can understand why you would think that.
No, that's all true. Yeah, Marcus too, right? So, okay, so now you get drafted by the Philly Eagles, and you're number one draft pick. You go there. Dick Vermeil is your coach, and you were there, what, 7 years, seven, 8 years?
Six.
6 years, okay. So part of that is you end up going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, God.
You got to tell me about that.
Well, you know what? Playing in the Super Bowl 15 as an Eagle against the Raiders was one of the highlights of my NFL career, because I have always been a Raiders fan, and it was just one of the most exciting things for me. And it's interesting about that Super Bowl, Mark. You know, we get there, you know, we all got there like 2 weeks early, whatever it was, and we were on lockdown with Coach Vermeil, very disciplined. You know, we were the opposite of the Raiders, and we had curfews. They didn't. They got their rental cars right away. We got ours 2 or 3 days before the Super Bowl. Matter of fact, some of their players wound up coming over to our hotel because some of their college friends played on our team. This is weird, Mark. So one night, man, here we had this 12 o'clock curfew. Our families, you know, the families come down. It was time for the families to come down, and my family came down, and you know, I got a chance to have dinner with him and this and that. And curfew at midnight, I'm sitting in my hotel room just thinking about, wow, man, we're locked down, this and that. So I'm watching TV. And here it is, you know, there is a sports segment coming on. And they say, why? Well, we're going to go downtown Bourbon Street with the Oakland Raiders. So they show Bourbon Street with John Matusak sitting there drinking two Hurricane drinks. And as John's sitting there drinking, I'm looking at the TV. I see my wife, my dad, my mom. Everybody's down around the ball with him. We're locked down. We can't even get out the room, man. But, you know, I remember that. That's one of the things I remember about it. And I do remember the way it ended. You know, it's a great experience to get to a Super Bowl. And but boy, if you win it, it's great. If you don't, it's like a lifetime of just a bad dream.
Yeah, and I think if I remember correctly, you guys got beat fairly soundly by the Raiders. Jim Plunkett was the MVP of the game. Is that right?
Yeah, Jim reminds me. Matter of fact, he just reminded me of that of this past Raider Alumni Weekend. Every time I see Jim, his wife wants to thank me and the Philadelphia Eagles for his Super Bowl Mercedes Benz he got for MVP.
That's great.
Anyway, all the love, man.
No, Plunkett's great. When I came in, he took me under. Yeah, he took me under his wing as his rook, which, you know,
says a lot about you, Mark.
Well, it's but I was doing things I hadn't done before in terms of, you know, pregame preparation and whatnot with Plunk. So you just kind of held on to your hat, and it's the Plunk, right? So great guy, love the guy. So, okay, so then, so you're there for 6 years, and then you got your dream call, and you got traded, or how did that work in terms of getting to Oakland? Actually, the LA Raiders.
The Eagles had been sold to another guy by a man named Norman Brayman, who was this big car tycoon or whatever he was down there. And there were some issues, some things that had taken place just prior to Norman, Leonard Toth selling the team. I won't get into the details of it, but there were a lot of unhappy ball players, like 10 of us. And myself and a guy named Dennis Harrison were the only two guys that refused to go to training camp unless something was done about the situation that popped up. Everybody was talking all, yeah, man, we'll hold out together. But when push came to shove, the other guys went in. Dennis and I, we kind of held our ground. So I told them, you know, then trade me then. They said, well, if we can trade you, I said, first of all, don't send me somewhere cold. I'm already in Philly. Chilly Philly's cold enough for me. So I'm not going anywhere cold. And they said, okay, where do you want to go? I said, Raiders. They said, give me your second choice. I said, Raiders. He said, third choice. I said, Raiders. So Raiders have always been the team that I wanted to go to. I was able to get to the Raiders because I had an issue with what was going on with the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm here to tell you the truth is that I hated to leave Philly because their fans are just awesome. They are really, truly awesome fans, man. And I love the city. But if I was leaving Philly, I'm coming home. I'm coming home and I'm going to play for the Raiders. But the thing of it was, they were no longer the Oakland Raiders. They were the
LA Raiders. Yep.
Yeah. And the funny thing of it is, when I got traded, I mean, my bag was packed because I was actually, I'd spoken to the San Francisco 49ers and they said that, okay, we made a trade for you. So I packed my bag. I had to catch a flight. And Al Davis called my wife, Cindy, and told her, tell Jerry, don't get on the plane because we're working on something. And I'm like, what? Next thing I know, I get a call from Coach Flores. You know, we've traded for you and this and that. So then that's how that went down like that. But it was exciting. It was a dream come true to play for the Raiders because it was such two different types of organizations. And the coaching staffs were all different. I came to the Raiders. I remember Al, you know how Al was. Al was, all he cared about was just winning. Yep. That was what it was. You know, and he said, I don't care what you do. I don't care what you do during the course of the week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. If you play hard for me, you can get arrested during the week and I get you out of jail if you play hard for me and I'll pay you. So, you know, I had to test that out. He was a man of his word.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go down that path then. So, okay. About challenging times, about overcoming things. So, let's go back to, I think, 1987. And you got arrested for driving under the influence. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. That was an interesting time in my life, man. You know, First of all, I'd like to say thank God there was no social media back in the days, because we'd all be in big trouble right now. But yeah, man, it was just something stupid and dumb, man. That's what it was, you know, bad decision, you know, the drinking and driving, or, you know, and it was silly, got caught. I learned from it. It was a changing point in my life, because, you know, when you get into trouble like that, I remember coming home and my incident was broadcast in Spanish, Chinese, Japanese, and some other language, man. And I just remember realizing, you know, the mistake that I had made and the harm and embarrassment that I was actually bringing upon my family and my friends and people from Santa Rosa, or people I might have gone to school with. That's what, and my mom, you know, and my dad. And like I said, you know, we all make mistakes. That was a big mistake in my life, but I've learned from that, because actually, this 2 months ago, I celebrated my 20th year of sobriety. So obviously I learned from it, but you know, I understand, you know, and speaking of that, I mean, when you watch the TV now and you watch the news, man, there's so many guys that are getting involved and get into trouble here and there. I understand that. We all make mistakes, but you know, seem like you got to learn from it. And these kids aren't learning from it, because some of them are repeat offenders over and over again. And I just don't get it, man. Yes, I do. It's a sickness that they have, you know, whether it's drinking or alcohol or drugs or domestic violence or whatever it may be. They all have a sickness, and they really need some help. You know, I understand suspending people, because one way to get to somebody is affecting their pocketbook. That's one way to do it. But I think, you know, while you're being suspended, you need to be in a treatment program for whatever it is that caused you to go into that dark space once, twice, three times, whatever it is, because, yes, you know, this game does not last long. And when you're finished playing this game, man, if you're not together, you're going to continue to do the same thing. So anyway, I just it was a learning experience for me. And like I said, 20 years of sobriety, man, and it always feels good to be able to tell my story. So I never have a problem talking about it. So,
yeah. Well, first of all, you know, congratulations to you. And, you know, we all make mistakes. I think for a lot of us, the only difference is who got caught and who didn't. My daughter was at a rock festival over in Coachella, you know, over in Palm Desert.
Right.
And she was with a bunch of girls, some of them were underage, and she was, you know, she was 20. She's now 21, but, you know, this was 2 weeks before her 21st birthday, and she happened to be standing there, and all these cops, you know, came around, and she wasn't drinking, she wasn't doing anything, and they gave her a minor in possession just for being associated in that group. And I said, Claudette, you know, the only difference between you and me is, you know, you got caught and I didn't. So, you know, that's one point. And then the second point is, and I think you've done this, is that if you want to be successful in life, then hang out with successful people and do what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. And take those best qualities. And if you're hanging, you know, conversely, if you're hanging out with bad people and doing the things you shouldn't be doing, especially as a professional athlete, knowing the consequences, then you're just not using good judgment. And it's pretty simple to me.
It's really simple. No, you hit it right on the head. It's really simple. You know, winners hang out with winners, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it's the company that you keep is the way you're going to be judged. You know what I mean? And you could be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And just by guilt, by association, you know, and then your life can be changed and it could be ruined because of that. So you have to be real careful and understand nowadays, you know, especially with this social media thing going on. I just tell these young kids now, when you go somewhere, you never know whose cell phone is recording something that you're doing that could be embarrassing to you and your family and so on and such and such. And you got to be real careful nowadays.
Well, I would say actually a little bit different, which is agree with everything you just said. But I would say I would assume that everybody is photographing and taking pictures and videoing everything you're doing.
Yeah, I was being nice, man. Yeah, you're right. It's light camera action, because everybody, that's what everybody's doing, you know, and like I said earlier, thank God there wasn't social media back in the day.
Yeah. Well, you know, you morph with the times, right? And you and I did not grow up with social media, and we kind of have learned it as we go. And these kids have. And so they just should know better, number one. Number two is, you know, life can be very fleeting, just like with your brother, unfortunately. And, you know, one minute you're there and the next minute you're not. And it's just poof. And then you're our age and you're going, okay, did I really need to do that? Right?
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, it's just for those people who really get it, you know, they're very fortunate. And maybe they've had some great mentorship along the way with their parents and friends and whatnot. And for those who don't, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, you kind of get one shot at the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, professional soccer, these other deals, professional sports. And if you blow it, you know, you just can't do it. Well, it's very rare when you get a redo.
Right. And you're very fortunate if you do get a redo. That's, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's move on from there. So you end your career with the Raiders. And I'm interested in talking to you about what that was like for you. I know for me, you know, there was like 2 years of, you know, I was in good position financially, but I just, you know, felt really lost. Like, what was I going to do? What was my new purpose? You know, what was that like for you?
Well, I know one thing. I did not watch any football for a whole year. I couldn't do it. It was hard for me. My kids could watch it. And I remember my daughters, Jackie and Jill, were saying, first Raider game we saw, they saw, Dad, he's wearing your number. And I told my daughters, I said, you know what, honey, that's not my number. I said, that's somebody else's number. I said, as a matter of fact, you got to understand something. That's all you are is just a number.
Mm.
That's what you are. And my daughters, I'm going to speed up here. Jackie went on full scholarship, volleyball scholarship to University of Florida. Jill has her full scholarship to University of Miami. Outstanding volleyball players, man. And I wanted to make sure they understood that's all you are is just a number. And make the best of it, you know, because when you're gone, they're going to give it to somebody else. So anyway, I did not want to watch football. I didn't watch it for a whole year. And I wasn't in a hurry to go to a gym, lift any weights, do any running. Mark, I was done. When I was finished. But it was difficult in the sense that, you know, you're treated differently when you're an athlete. And that's the honest goodness truth, as you know, because you get just like this. How many dinners have you gone to that you've never had to pay for? You walk into someplace. You know, it's like Michael Jordan could go into a restaurant and or I'm just using Michael Jordan for an example. Here you go. He wouldn't have to pay for his meal. He can afford to pay for everybody in there. But for some reason, they just, oh, no, don't worry about it, this and that. So you get used to being pampered and treated, you know, treated a certain way, which I loved it. And that changed. I noticed that changed. But, you know, I didn't miss the part of being in the limelight because I'm a pretty low-key, quiet guy. I don't need to be around a crowd of people to feel good, you know. You know, some people still need to be, you know, when they walk into some place and want somebody to know who they are and this and that. No, man, I'm cool with just being me. You know, if you find out who I am, that's a whole other story. But I let all that go, and I think it made it a little easier for me to drift away from the game.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got their own thing. And you know, I did miss that part of it. You know, between the Raiders, and then I went down to, I was traded down to New Orleans. And, you know, the guy who I hung out with all the time just got inducted into the Hall of Fame is Morton Anderson. And so Morton,
kicker.
Well, I'd never been on a team before where the kicker is the star of the team. You know, the kicker is the kicker, right? And so the kicker is like Marcus Allen down there, right? I mean, it was crazy. But, you know, everywhere we'd go, we never paid for anything. And then you know, all of a sudden one day it's cut off. And that's a big adjustment. So that's that. So do you still have any connection tie? I mean, like all of us have connection ties, but do you go to the Raider games? Are you involved with them at all? What is your role, if any, with those guys?
Well, I am. I work with the Raiders during the season. The Raiders legends, the guys that live up here in Northern California. What we do is we do suite visitations, and we go around and get a chance to say hello to people, thank these people for spending their hard-earned money and still supporting the Raiders. That's a good feeling because some people recognize you, some people don't, but that's okay too. You know, those that don't, especially these young kids, they don't care if they know you're not. They know you played for the Raiders, and that's exciting enough. And Mark, to see the expressions on certain people's face, man, when we walk into these rooms, there's like 15 of us or something like that, man. And
so who's in that group? So it's you and Cliff. I know he's in that group.
No, it's not Cliff. No, it's not Cliff. It's,
okay.
It's Vance Mueller.
Yep.
Sam Williams.
Yeah.
Barry Sims. Is it Sims? Yeah, Barry. Who else? A bunch of other guys.
Yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of guys. A lot. And that's what we do during the season, man. And it's it keeps me still in touch and involved with the Raiders. And we do some Raider image stores before like Saturday night before a game. And so during football season, the home games, I'm at every home game. And I like it for a couple of reasons, because besides meeting people and saying hello and thanking them and taking pictures and signing autographs, you get a chance to see some other players. You know, I mean, one day Lindy King was in there doing it. And then, Mitch Willis. Oh, my goodness, Country Mitch Willis from SMU. But, you know, and then I get a chance to see guys like Clem Daniels and Biletnikoff, you know, those people that I saw growing up. So I'm still attached to the Raiders during the season. So it is good. It's healthy. It makes me feel good that I'm, you know, that you still want it and people still appreciate what you've done.
Well, I want you to invite me up there and you and I go to a Raider game sometime and feel wanted like that. That'd be great.
Well, just let me know. You know how busy you are, man. You and Coach Mora.
Well, you know, I invited you down this way and you ended up at back in College Station last year with Jamal Wilkes, right? You and Jamal on the sideline there. It was great.
Yeah, Jamal and Donovan, the young ball player that's played, you know, from UCLA, in that series, baller. So I had a great time. You know, Mark, I do know, you know, when I'm down that way, man, if I'm down that way, I do know I always got a place to stay and somebody to hang out with you. And I appreciate that. But hey, whenever you want to know, whenever you want to go, let me know, man. I mean, you don't even have to let me know. All you got to do is call Fudgy.
Well, I could do that. I could call Fudgy. Yeah. So speaking of which, I'm hoping that you can make it down for that September. I think it's third game, UCLA versus Texas A&M, the rematch in the Rose Bowl.
In the Rose Bowl?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll check that out. I'll see what's happening.
You got a place to stay, number one. And number two is, you know, everything will be, you know, sideline pass, the whole thing.
You know, I want people to listen to understand something, okay? Mark, I love you, man. You know I do. And I remember you telling me, JR, if you ever down here, if you want to come to any game, you pick out any game you want to come to, he said, you ain't got to worry about it. I'll have this, you'll be on the sideline with me and this and that. And Mark Patterson, known as Hands to us, we can talk about that in a minute. You're a man of your word. So, and I'm that meant a lot to me, man, because, it hasn't always been that way. Because of you, I do know that anytime I'm down there, I'm on the sideline, you and Coach Mora, you know, and, it means a lot to me. It really does, man, because I'm gonna tell you, you know, it hasn't always been that way and you just made it so much easier, man. I appreciate you and Coach Mora, with that.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously it's Coach Mora at the end of the day, but, you know, Jim and I are best buddies.
But your relationship with him, man, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Just, you know, you and I play together, you and I know each other. I mean, that's one of your best friends right there. And you were like, hey, da-da-da-da-da, next thing you know, I'm standing on the sideline.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll never forget the Texas A&M game, man, standing there at that tunnel. And you remember, they were standing in the tunnel, and they were waiting for UCLA to run out on the field, and Coach Moore refused to let the ball players go. He said, no, we're going to let them go out first, and then we're coming out behind him. And I was like, what a move. It was pretty freaking awesome that day in College Station. He just said, and I remember the dudes with the little the yellow jackets on that said staff, whatever it was, they were trying to keep Coach Moore to get the guys to no, run out on the field. He was like, nope, hold back, hold back. And the dudes were getting fired up, man. It was exciting. Anyway, yeah.
You know, I've been all over the country and all these games, you know, between myself playing like you and then with Jim now going into his sixth year. And I traveled to all these games, and probably of every single stadium I've ever been in, it had the best college, you know, enthusiasm and fan support I've seen. And, you know, again, you know, Washington and LSU and these other places are fantastic, amazing, but they just took it to a whole nother level.
They sure did. And they were so polite too. They were polite before the game. They've been polite after the game. And it was an experience. It really was, Mark. And I'm glad you said that because, you know, when I run into people from Texas or might be A&M fans, I just say, you know what, man, I've never seen it in my whole life. The way your fans are and the respect that they have for people and the hospitality and that they have for teams that come in there. And you're right. It was something. Sorry we lost, but it was still something.
So, Jerry, as we come kind of to the end of this podcast, you know, I always like to ask the question, and you've been through a lot. You know, you had this tremendous success. You've had some setbacks with, you know, personally like me and pretty much everybody else. You know, I always ask the question, if you haven't been through a tough time, then you're lying, right? And my question to you is, you know, what advice would you have for anybody that's going through a tough time and just trying to make it to the other side?
Is understanding that you're not in it alone. And when if you realize that you don't have to do it by yourself. In my situation, I knew from my upbringing that no matter what situation I was in, good, bad, or depression, or whatever it is, all I had to do was call on God and turn it over to Him. You know, that's how I deal with it. But you can't just keep the stuff inside of you because it will kill you. It's like a volcano. It's sitting in there boiling and boiling and boiling. And if you're going through some situations in life, you need to talk to somebody about it because once you talk to somebody, it's like turning a knob, letting a little pressure out of there. Let some of that steam out of there before it erupts. And, you know, and understand that sometimes we go into these downward spirals, you know, but you don't have to stay in it. You know, when I realized that the most important thing is, like I said, to have a attitude of gratitude, man, and understand that, you know, there's a purpose for you here and make the best of it while you're here. Because my dad's dead. He's been gone. My mom got killed in a car wreck in 06. My brother gets shot in the head and dies. He gets shot in the head when I'm in high school. He dies when I'm in college. And all buried at the same cemetery, man.
Hmm.
And when I go out to that cemetery, man, once a month at least, and I sit there or I kneel there, I'll just lay down whatever it is to be with my family, I realize, once you reach this place, it's final. There is no more I love you or I miss you. You don't have one more opportunity to do anything. So while we are here on this earth, really make the best of it. Be the best person that you can be. You know, treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat people with respect because there's one reservation, there's one date that we all will not be late for, and that's that day when we pass on.
Mm-hmm.
And just appreciate what you have now. And if you take time to take some personal inventory, you'll find there is a lot of good in there. If there's not a lot of good, there is some good. Because we're all good to start with.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes it's the environment and the situations and the people we hang around with which make us change into something else.
That was so beautifully spoken, number one. Number two is I am super grateful that you were able to come on this podcast and share your life story. It's amazing. And the third thing, and as always, I know it flows both directions, but totally love you. you know, you've always been one of those guys. No matter what, things can be at their worst or their best with you, and you're going to always be there. And that says a lot about you, says a lot about you as a person. And, you know, those are the type of people that I want to be around and associate myself with. So I so appreciate it.
Hey, Mark, I tell you what, man. I love you too, man. And I tell you what, man, ain't no mountain high enough for you, man. And the fact that you accept that challenge to climb, to reach these summits, man, to reach the mountaintop, I have a lot of respect for you, man, because it not only is it I don't do it, but I do know that it's physically and emotionally, you have to be in shape mentally and physically to think about this, but to complete the task. You know, I take my hat off to you, brother, because you don't stop and you never give up. And like I tell people, never give up on your dreams. You know what I mean? And it's, and should always shoot for the top like that, man, because you do it. I'm proud of you. I'm going to live the mountain climbing to the highest peaks to you.
Uh-huh.
and because you could do it and you enjoy doing it. It's a challenge, Mark. You know what I mean? And I appreciate and have a great deal of respect, man, for you and, you know, how much I love you, man. And thank you for having me on your podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, listen, Jerry, if anybody wants to find you, do you have a Facebook or, you know, Twitter account, anything?
You can find me on Facebook.
Okay. Jerry Robinson.
That's it. There's okay. Some Snapchat out there. And what else? There is Twitter. But you know what, Mark? Honestly, I can't remember what they are. I mean, I have a hard time remembering passwords, man. Now, you know, I tell you, let me say this. The one big thing from going from wide receiver to inside linebacker is I'm not able to remember some of the things that I could when I was a wide receiver from playing inside linebacker because of all the collisions.
Well, here's the good news. You can go back and listen to this podcast anytime so you can remember it, all right?
Okay. Right on, Mark. I appreciate it, brother.
It's all good. Hey, Jerry, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I love you, man.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the podcast this week. We had another great guest, and it is so awesome to continually have these different people on, talk about their different adversity, how they've overcome that, and what they've done to affect change in their life to become very successful. So really appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, we love the rating and reviews that you guys do on iTunes. If you haven't done that, please go do that. It really helps us in terms of increasing our visibility within iTunes. Anyways, it's just fun to share the love and what these different stories, these different people are all about. So make sure you tune in next week. We appreciate it. And that's it. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.